BGU Radio。
Hello to all our listeners, and we are very glad that you join us for AfriCast. With me in the studio, we have my lovely friend here, Sekiro Abiuna Youssef, that we refer to as SK, and myself, Chen Sara Mordechai. And other team member, Paradosa Mustafa, that help us in the research. This podcast is a part of our course, Politics, Economy and Society in the 20th Century in Africa, with our dear professor, Professor Kofa Koranani.
AfriCast, the podcast of the Africa Center at Ben-Gurion University of the Negev, produced by Shachar Livneh and Omri Ovadia.
So after we settled down and we were comfortable in our seats, I wanted to ask you at home and are listening to us, do you think your country is corrupt? And I am interested to ask, did you know that there is a global corruption index? You are probably asking, why do we know this? And I will ask you, why do you don't know this? The answer to this question and the consequences of not knowing this answer will be clarified today during the podcast. But before that, in order for us all to be coordinated, we sought in the academic world in definition for corruption. As you probably think, there are many, but this is the shortest and the understandable for us. The power of the public office is used for a personal gain in a manner to controvert the role of the game. Certain illegal acts such as fraud, money laundering, and more. And it's important for us to adding something more. In the academic world, it's repeatedly explained that more corruption is considered a routine matter that is perceived a part of the daily life, the more complex situation in the country. Today we are going to talk about corruption in Nigeria. And we are going to have a very interesting conversation with my friend SK from the country, who will tell us about the case that explains how dangerous the corruption can be if it's not addressed. But before we getting started, a few details that are important for you to know. As I said, it's turned out that there is a global corruption index by which you can check how corrupt your country is compared to others. Just for you to know, Nigeria, which are going to talk about it today, it's ranked 154 out of 180. And it's important to know, according to a poll conducted by Afrobarometer, 47% of the voters believe that the police in Nigeria are corrupt and accept bribe for everyday action that they take. After the police can be found, the government institution with 39% and then the public schools with 32% bribe. However, my friend SK will tell us a little bit more about himself and Nigeria.
Thank you, Ken, for having me. And of course, I want to thank our listeners at home for listening to us this morning. So my name is Yusuf Sikiro Abiona. So I'm a Nigerian and I grew up in Nigeria before coming to Israel for my study of African Sustainable Community at the Ben-Gurion University here in Israel. Thank you for having me on board. Well, when you talk about corruption in Nigeria, of course, corruption in Nigeria is mind-boggling. So when you say mind-boggling, in fact, corruption in Nigeria has been described as a Pandora box. What do we mean by Pandora box? This is an issue that is multifaceted in dealing with corruption in Nigeria. Let me give our listeners a bit of historical account of how corruption has evolved in Nigeria over years. Between 1960, when the country became independent, and of course, 1999, when the country transited from military rule to civil rule, which is currently the ongoing administration in Nigeria today. So in 1960, Nigeria became independent, and of course, within 6 years of our independence from the nation, we realized that precisely on January 1st, 1966, we had the first coup in Nigeria. What precipitated this coup? According to Nzogu, the leader of this military junta in 1960s, declared that the reason why they are taking over the power from the founding fathers of Nigeria was the fact that they realized that corruption is actually growing among the political elites. And of course, for them to get rid of corruption, there is a need for them to first push aside the founding father. And of course, between January 1966 and of course July 1966 again, there is a counter coup which became bloody and of course resulted in the famous civil war in Nigeria between 1967 and 1970.
So this was a military coup?
Yes.
So did the army make any change in the corruption status?
So during this period, of course, corruption was not just among the political elite alone. It wasn't, because the military government that became that ruled Nigeria between 1967 and 1965 under the leadership of General Yakubu Gowon, of course, was actually accused of corruption. So you wonder why a military administration that claimed to come to clean corruption is also accused of being a corrupt element in Nigerian face. And of course, by 1975, we have another coup in which the so-called making Nigerian a corrupt free also was alleged of corruption and was also pushed aside by another coup led by the late General Murtala Muhammad and our own Chief Olusegun Obasanjo in Nigeria today. In 1970, Nigeria had oil boom. It was even alleged that the then president, General Yakubu Gowon, argued that, money is not actually the problem of Nigeria, but how to spend it. And of course, when he made this assertion, it became a global rendition that how could there be money as much as possible and the nation could not know how to spend it. And of course, corruption is thriving among the leadership of the government. In 1975, when another coup was led by the late General Murtala Muhammad and of course succeeded the General Yakubu Gowon, realized that between 1975 and 1979, there was also a case of corruption, particularly in 1977. When the current president of Nigeria, President Muhammadu Buhari, who was then the minister of petroleum in Nigeria, was also accused of corruption with an amount of $2.8 billion missing from the national treasury. So it became a global affair that people begin to see. When you talk about corruption, where is Nigeria? When you talk about corruption, what is happening in Nigeria? One thing that the administration of Obasanjo did, of course, the assassination of his boss, I mean the late General Murtala Muhammad Buhari, in another attempted coup shortly after they became the leadership of the country. So in 1977, when this issue of corruption also came about, so there was a need for a renewed agitation for the return to democracy.
So what happened when Nigeria came back to democracy?
So when Nigeria returned to democracy, it elected the now late General Alhaji Shehu Shagari. So Alhaji Shehu Shagari was the elected president for the Second Republic between 1979 and 1973. The challenge that Nigerian had after there was oil glut, which of course led to permitted in Nigerian budget over the year, had resulted in Nigerian taking loans from International Monetary Fund and World Bank. Nigerian debt profile in 1970 started rising. So this was the challenge that the administration of Alhaji Shehu Shagari also had when they came to power in 1979. And of course, between 1979 and 1983, Nigerian economy had issues. Nigerian economy had issues. There was unemployment, there was retrenchment of civil servants, and of course, there were issues even in the educational sector, such that people started clamoring again that corruption is rising within the government of Alhaji Shehu Shagari. What is paradoxical about the administration of Alhaji Shehu Shagari was the fact that Nigerians believed that Alhaji Shehu Shagari was not corrupt, but he was unable to fight corruption within his government, such that by 1984, shortly after Alhaji Shehu Shagari was elected for the second time in office, then we had another coup led by the President Muhammadu Buhari, who was then General Muhammadu Buhari. So General Muhammadu Buhari also became the president of Nigeria between 1984 and 1985. In fact, in the history of Nigerian coup, General Muhammadu Buhari then was the shortest because when he came on board, he also had this notion that, we are coming to clean corruption in Nigeria. And of course, in his very first opening speech, it was clearly stated that corruption has increased and it has risen among Nigerian politicians, including the military elites. And there is a need for Nigeria to clean corruption. And do not forget that at the time, there was also international prayer. There was also international prayer asking Nigeria to refine-tune their economy by first liberalizing the economy and, of course, devalue Naira. This was part of the crisis that led Alhaji Shehu Shagari administration into trouble. So when Muhammadu Buhari came on board in 1984, there was a question that, the superpowers were like, what exactly will Buhari do with this administration? Particularly when it had stated that corruption must go. And of course, during this short period of General Muhammadu Buhari as the president of the nation, corruption was fought. In fact, what defined Buhari's administration between 1984 and 1985 was war against indiscipline, and of course, including corruption. Muhammadu Buhari at the time also targeted the military elite, and which some scholars have alluded to the fact that perhaps that was the reason why there was another coup less than a year that Muhammadu Buhari took over power in 1984. And of course, who succeeded General Muhammadu Buhari, then we have our own Maradona. And who are we referring to? General Ibrahim Gadamasi Babangida. Gadamasi Babangida ruled Nigeria between 1985 and 1993, and he was dubbed as Maradona. Why? Because he was so skillful that each time he was able to understand the pulse of the general public. And as soon as he realized the fact that, oh, people are grumbling about the situation with the economy, so he knew what to do next. He also promised Nigerians that, oh, we are going to return to democracy several times. He came on board in 1985, promised that by 1987, Nigeria will return to democracy. When it was 1987, he came about with another excuse that, well, simply for the fact that corruption is still rife among the Nigerian political elite, there was still blah, blah, blah. What next? He promised that, oh, it is not realizable that in 1987, Nigeria cannot return to democracy. We'll have to wait till 1990. So, Nigerians believed General Ibrahim Babangida that, oh yes, we can move on to 1990, so by 1990 we will return to democracy. When it was in 1990, of course, it was another ball game entirely. Babangida still came back to Nigerians that, well, when you look at our economy and you look at what we are doing to survey the economy, to fight corruption, of course, you will realize that it is not yet time for us to return to democracy. It was at this point that civil society organization in Nigeria now rose against the government of General Ibrahim Gadamasi Babangida, and of course, clamoring that it is high time General Gadamasi Babangida leave the seat and return Nigeria to democracy. And this is what led to the famous 1993 general election.
Wow, thank you about this brief history. It was really interesting. But please tell us, Takiro, how is corruption is manifested in practice, in everyday life?
Well, thank you, Ken, once again. Let me quickly give these short statistics about corruption in Nigeria, and you see how it has manifested in our everyday life in Nigeria. For instance, between 1960 and 1999, a whopping sum of $400 billion was carted away from the Nigerian treasury through the political elite and, of course, the military elite. And, of course, again, between 2005 and 2014, another whopping sum of 182 billion naira also left Nigerian treasury for who and to where. Do you understand? When you look at between 1960 and 1999 and 2005 to 2014, this amount of money was scattered away from the treasury. You can begin to see the impact of corruption on everyday life of Nigerians. Right from the 1980s through the 1990s up to present day, Nigeria is one of the leading poorest nations in the world. We talk about corruption among the Nigerian political elite, the military elite, the police, in the education sector, and of course, in fact, according to one of the U.S. anthropologists, Daniel Johnson Smith, he argues that corruption is actually a cultural issue in Nigeria, because as an ethnic group, you realize that one of your own is corrupt. And rather than calling the person to action, you instead support the person. So it shows that corruption in Nigeria is actually a cultural issue, as the barometer showed that Nigerian police is the most corrupt with 47%. Yeah, it's very true and correct, if no more. Because you move from one state to the other. Let me give a very vivid example. You can move from Osun State to Lagos State, which is more or less like 200 kilometers away from one another. And you can count on your fingertips that between Osun and Lagos, you can meet nothing less than 15 police checkpoints. At each of these checkpoints, whether you are going through a private car or public transportation, you are expected to drop a certain amount of money at each Nigerian police checkpoint. For what?
Something that's happened to you too?
Exactly.
It's happening all the time.
In fact, it's still very, very thriving in Nigeria today. And of course, in fact, let me give you another vivid example to understand this. each Nigerian currency has been given a name. So we have, for instance, we have 5 Naira, 10 Naira, 20, 50. 15 Naira, which is a very common denomination among the Nigerian police, is given a name. This note, it is referred to as white. White. So the moment you are asked to pay white, you know that you are being expected to pay 15 Naira at each Nigerian checkpoint when you're traveling along. So, and this is a crazy issue. And of course, when you go to the education sector as well, just recently, one Nigerian wrote an apology letter to Joint Admission Matriculation Board. This is a board that deals with transition of a student from secondary school to university. So you write an exam. 21 years after he has written JAMB, he wrote JAMB that while he was writing his exam 21 years ago, he manipulated JAMB, that JAMB should please forgive him. Do you understand? So when we're growing up as well, we grew up to a particular cliche, EXPO. What is EXPO? It is exam malpractices. Exam malpractices, and it's rife among the Nigerian youth such that you believe that you must manipulate an examination process for you to secure a good grade. It's mind-boggling.
Wow, completely. So thank you for that. Now that we know about corruption index and have heard directly from a Nigerian, what do you think are the causes of corruption in Nigeria and the world in general?
Politics. Yeah.
Very simple.
Politics. Because when you look at the question of Nigeria, let me quickly sing this little song and I will quickly interpret it in English so that our listeners at home can understand us better. Okay. In 1960, we have this popular song, Mako wo wano, tapa loni gunu, igunu loni tapa, Adelabu, Benkelemezi, Mako wo wano. So, Benkelemezi is one of the earliest Nigerian political elites. He died very young. A very vibrant political elite. He represented Ibadan. Ibadan is referred to as the biggest city in West Africa. So, because of ethnic tension between Ibadan, and of course within the Yoruba enclave between Penkelemes Adilabu and Awolowo, of course the famous Awolowo, Kelemes was representing Ibadan, and Penkelemes was alleged of corruption, of siphoning Ibadan people's money. But because of the ethnic tension between Ibadan and Ijebu, where Awolowo came from, the Ibadan people stood ground with their son and were singing, continue to siphoning our money. Continue to siphoning our money. It is we that owns the money. It is we that owns you. So continue to siphon. When, so you imagine if a group of people decided to elevate corruption on the basis of ethnicity. And of course, you can begin to see from the north, to the southwest, to the southeast, to the south-south, how corruption, how politics, ethnicity, religion has defined what corruption is in Nigeria today. So it's really an appalling situation out there. Really an appalling situation.
Okay, Sekiro, let me stop you for 1 second. I want to ask you something. Did you know that 44% of the citizens of Nigeria do not believe that they have a power to change this problematic reality of corruption in the country?
Well, Ken, yeah, that may be true. That may be true. Very true. And of course, let me give you...
How do you explain it?
Yeah, let me cite this very example. When in 1999, Nigerian returned to democracy, between 1999 and today, Nigerian has had an experience of uninterrupted civil rule of over 20 years. As we were told, democracy is all about election. Transition from... maybe 4 years or whatever years, of course, there should be a transition of power from one person to the another and stuff like that. So between 1999 and 2007, the then ruling party, People's Democratic Party, was known as the most corrupt political party in the history of Nigeria. Why? Because at every point of election, there was always manipulation. Such that in 2007, the president-elect of Nigeria, now late, Alhaji Umaru Musa Yar'Adua, attested to the fact that the election that brought him to power was manipulated, was rigged.
Wow, it's crazy.
This was...
So it's no wonder.
Exactly. Exactly. That. And of course, let me give you another example that I experienced when I was in secondary school. It was when we were writing our final year exam to graduate from what you call high school here. Okay. You understand now? So we were writing an exam. And of course, because I was a student leader, I was number one student leader, we call a senior boy or senior prophet. My colleagues and my friends knew that I'm not going to support any act of cheating in exam. Because first, the school I attended, Adventist Grammar School, is one of the leading, most effective school in Nigeria. Even WAHEC, which was West African Examination Council, recognizes Adventist Grammar School, Ede, as one of the schools that cheating is prohibited. Okay. Well, at every point. Do you understand now? So, while we were writing exam, I realized that the next candidate sitting to me was bringing out something from his pocket. And I knew he was about to cheat. And I told him, man, can you please return that? I'm not going to allow you to do it. Do whatever you could and let it go.
Wow, you are the most moral person ever. It will never happen in Israel, this kind of stuff.
Yeah, you can say that. But of course, I can't say that I'm the most moral person. But it's all about doing the right thing at the right time. So
he didn't copy?
Yeah, I did not allow him to copy. But you know what follows? What followed was the fact that not quite long I declined him from doing that. I personally was suspected for cheating.
Oh my God, I can't believe it.
I personally was suspected for cheating, and the supervisor asked me to stand up from what I was writing my exam. I was so infuriated that day.
Oh my God, so depressing.
You understand? Not quite long I was asked to stand up, the entire hall rose up and say, Mr. Supervisor, sir, that is our senior boy. It can never cheat. Please allow him to continue his exam. And the man just looked at me and said, okay, sit down and continue your examination.
Wow.
So as soon as I sat back, I then called back the other guy, the other candidate, that had I allowed you to continue to cheat, I would have been implicated as well, because even though I'm not interested in what you're about to do. So, and that is why I declined. You can imagine if at every education sector, every student, This does not represent the entire situation in Nigeria. But I'm only citing an example that, of course, I witnessed. That's how corruption can be so polarized in Nigeria.
Wow, thank you so much for this answer, Sakio. It was really interesting. But yeah. I wanted to ask you that. Like, how this answer that you just said to us can affect other citizens in Nigeria to do something about corruption?
Yeah, you see, the question of how Nigerian citizens addressing corruption is not new. And of course, I can begin to cite a number of people, even in hierarchy, that have tried as much as possible to ensure that they do the right thing at the right time. And of course, continue to preach anti-corruption issues in Nigeria. The late Professor Dora Akuyili, who was then the Director General of NAFDAC. NAFDAC is an agency that deals with drugs and health issue in Nigeria. When she was elected, not because she was a female, gender, Professor Dora Akuyili was representing a gender group as a woman, but because she understands the fact that Nigeria and Nigerians have accumulated bad image in the international arena. There was a need for her to begin to see how can we begin to address corruption. And of course, she did it perfectly well, such that within few years of her leadership of NAFDAC in Nigeria, every sector that has to do with health in Nigeria recognizes the fact that there is one woman out there called Dora Akuyili. She will never take nonsense. And of course, everybody sit tight. There was also the case of President Olusegun Obasanjo. You realize that Transparency International has consistently drawn Nigeria as the most corrupt Nigeria. The paradox of it was the fact that Olusegun Obasanjo was part of those that actually established Transparency International in 1993. Coming on board in 1999, the very first thing that Obasanjo did was to ensure that there is an agency that will address the issue of corruption in Nigeria. And that's what led to the establishment of ICPC, Independent Corrupt Practices Commission, and of course, EFCC, Economic, Financial and Crimes Commission in Nigeria today. But the crisis of EFCC, which is the most popular of the two anti-graft agencies in Nigeria, is the fact that it was politicized. Whether Nuhu Ribadu, the very first chairman of the EFCC, or Farida Wasiri, who is even a woman, or Ibrahim Lamode, or Magu, or the present leadership of EFCC chairman, Rashid Bawa. Do you understand? They find it very difficult to address corruption among particularly Nigerian political elite who have continued to frustrate efforts of fighting corruption in Nigeria.
Sakio, thank you for investing your time and coming to talk with us with such passion. It was amazing.
Thank you very
much. I think the conversation today we had today actually is very important and critical for any listeners of any age, but especially, as you said, for the young people among us like you.
Thank you.
As Kurt Cobain said, the duty of youth is challenge corruption. Yes. And I think this is what Sakio told us today. fits exactly with this statement. Nothing will change without involvement of the citizens and their desire to change it. We want to thank BGU Radio and Shachar Livnei, our great producer. Have a great day.
Thank you.